This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. President Trump on social media directing Homeland Security, Defense Department, and others to take all necessary actions to, in his words, liberate Los Angeles from the migrant invasion. Protesters of immigration raids and the newly deployed National Guard are near a federal building, says ABC's Alex Stone in L.A., a tense moment when they had to make way for a motorcade.
The crowd fought back. Pepper balls were fired off of the crowd. Flashbang devices were used. The crowd has grown, some holding profanity-laced anti-ICE signs.
Democratic governors say the Guard deployment is an abuse of power. Millions in the U.S. are under potentially dangerous weather alerts now and later tonight with possible tornadoes and hail the size of baseballs. Included are Virginia, West Virginia, Maryland, plus the Washington, D.C. area. A skydiving plane crashed today in Tullahoma, Tennessee, says the police department. Two people hurt, 20 on board, a twin-engine turboprop. This is ABC News. 6 decades after the federal government ordered Louisiana's Concordia Parish to desegregate its schools, the district remains racially divided. One high school is about 90% black. Another high school is about 60% white. There's a sharp drop in official corporate and government funding for this month's Pride celebrations in the U.S. San Francisco Pride lost $200,000 in contributions after 5 major sponsors dropped out. Tom Polino is the board chair of the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus.
The National Endowment for the Arts, which we would typically receive grants from, are not coming to us over the next 4 years, simply because of who we are and the art that we produce.
Some companies have quietly returned with anonymous donations. Dozens of research and exploration boats from around the world set sail just off the French coastal city of Nice today to kick off this week's third UN Ocean Conference and pay tribute to World Oceans Day. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
The soap scientists have found a way to incorporate Sydney Sweeney's actual bathwater into the soap. What if she doesn't smell good? I know she's beautiful.
It smells terrible.
What if she stinks? And no one is going to tell her that because she's Sydney Sweeney. Here's an open invitation to Sydney Sweeney. Come by the Nightlight Studios. I'll smell you and let you know if this is a good product.
Maybe drop off, you know,
and give us a few bucks.
Yeah. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Lily Roberts, she is from the Center for American Progress Action Fund.
They're trying to pretend that this bill would be good for the working class because of this really small carve out to our tax laws. The no tax on tips piece does not at all even come close to addressing the problem of wages in this country. You know, a third of workers who work for tips in the first place don't make enough money to pay taxes at all.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. As federal electric vehicle incentives face potential rollbacks, a new study is highlighting the burden of gasoline costs on Black and Latino drivers. Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
The Fuel Equity Report shows Blacks and Latinos are super users of gasoline, spending on average 15% of their paycheck to fuel their cars. The median household income for Blacks and Latinos in Wisconsin is between $31,000 and $46,000. Dr. Shelley Francis with EV Hybrid Noir says systemic factors like disinvestment in public transportation, economic segregation, and long commute times all contribute to the disproportionate impact.
They're also more likely on average to be driving these older, less fuel efficient cars due to income as well as financing barriers that they may experience.
The study says EV adoption could save Blacks and Latinos an average of $4,900 a year on fuel and maintenance, but barriers like affordability, charging access, and education persist. The report found the top 10% of Black and Latino gasoline users are generally concentrated in smaller cities and rural areas. The study suggests targeted policies to encourage equitable adoption of EV for Black and Latino communities, including enhancing purchase incentives, expanding financing options, and increasing charging infrastructure in communities where top gasoline users live. Francis says addressing the big misinformation gap about EVs is also crucial.
pushing more of those types of stories out there to show like the everyday driver. It's not some fancy person living out in a castle somewhere. It's just regular folks who are trying to work, make ends meet, and provide for their families.
For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Some showers and thunderstorms developing for today. Some areas of smoke as well. Our winds turning to the northwest, and they'll be a little gusty. High temperatures warming to the middle 70s. For tonight, any rain comes to an end. Lows in the upper 40s to near 50. It's 75 at our studios.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday, we'll talk to State Senator Chris Larson. We'll have a guest talking about the growth of building trades apprenticeships. And we're joined by Dr. Kristen Lyerly as well.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
You're listening to the Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matt and Air on Air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome in to Hour 2 of the Civic Media Spotlight. This week on Matinair on Air, Jane and Greg welcomed on State Assembly Representative Renuka Mayadev. She's the lead author for a bill in Madison that would fund childcare here in Wisconsin, which is both in crisis and also a top priority for the Joint Finance Committee.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Kevin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine, where you can always join us. Call or text, the number is the same, no matter where you're listening across the state, around the country, 855-752-4842, or leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream, on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Childcare, a big, big issue here in Wisconsin, all around the country, but the Joint Finance Committee in Wisconsin held four meetings across the state over the last couple of weeks. The top three things that constituents, I don't know, the people that legislators work for, brought up were health care, child care,
and education. Yeah.
That was right out of my head. We are delighted to be joined by Representative Renuka Mayadev. She is an assemblyman from District 77. Good morning, Representative. Thank you so much for joining us from our world headquarters in Madison.
We can't hear you.
Which is odd because we did a sound check and...
Okay.
There we go. We did
it. Good morning.
Welcome, Representative. Thank you so much for joining us. We did obviously mention that the Joint Finance Committee held all these hearings and then essentially went back and stripped out everything that people they had heard from wanted in the next budget here in Wisconsin. So the Democrats have come up with their own package to try and address the child care crisis. Before we get to that, Representative, I want to talk a little bit, first of all, about your decision to run for office. What was it that got you into politics? Because this is your first role as a representative.
Yes. This is the first time I've held an elected seat. So, you know, I'm a mother. I'm a daughter of immigrants. I've worked for women, children, and families all of my career. I had the great honor of working for Marion Wright Edelman, who was the founder and the civil rights leader who worked with Dr. King. She founded the Children's Defense Fund. So I worked for her for many years running the state office in Ohio. And, you know, she told me, when you see injustice, you got to stand up. And so right now, we're seeing it in our state and across the country. There's a lot of things that are happening. They're unjust, unlawful, unconstitutional. And so I had to stand up and fight for women, children, and families.
Was it daunting for you to decide to run? Because I think there are people listening, men and women, who are thinking, gosh, I would really like to do something, but I just don't think I can. What would you say to folks who feel like that?
Yeah, I mean, it is daunting, right? You have to raise money. You have to make connections. You have to get your name out there. I would say to folks that are interested, you know, start local. I think start with advocacy. Like I said, I worked as an advocate. And then I also worked in politics for the former governor of Ohio, the last Democrat as of now. Hopefully Ohio will have another Democratic governor. But I worked for Governor Ted Strickland of Ohio. So I started to get my feet well in politics. And I think folks can do that. They can do it at the local level. They can do it at the state level or the federal level. So, and there's so much advocacy, especially now, Jane. I mean, there's just so many things that we need folks to stand up and say, this is not right. This is not American.
And I think it's important that you pointed out that you can start small. It's not like everybody who jumps in, I'm going to run for senator. That's not necessarily the normal track that people follow when they get into politics.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And you learn so much along the way. I mean, I have to tell you my work, and I'm also a lawyer. So as I've worked in these fields of policy, advocacy, in politics, I've learned so much that helps me do my job today. And I think it's invaluable, especially at this time now where we know understanding the law and understanding our norms and what we need to protect them is so important.
When you were campaigning last year and knocking on doors, it was something we always like to ask elected officials who, you know, have to go through that campaign process, what can be grueling, but you're knocking on doors, you're going to events, you're talking to people, and you're not just talking to Democrats, you're talking to Republicans, you're talking to everybody. And I always want to know, what are the things that actually, as Wisconsinites, as a group, concern us, regardless of who you vote for? You know, we mentioned child care, we mentioned health care and education, but are there other things that you heard from your now constituents who said, these are the things that really are on our, these are our kitchen table items for the economy, those kinds of things you heard?
Yeah, I mean, this one, I had people crying at their doorstep. Oh. More than my two hands can count over the months that I knocked on doors. And it was around abortion. It was around access to abortion. I had mothers and fathers say, this is critically important. And the fact that we still have that 1849 law on our books is appalling. It's alarming. And that's one of the top things that we're going to get rid of when we're in the majority. But it was really emotional. I had actually a devout Catholic, an older woman, come out of her door. I can remember the home clear as day. And she said, if I hadn't had, after I gave birth to my fourth child, and she knew she had five children, the DNC, after I gave birth, after I had a miscarriage, before I had my other child, I wouldn't be here today.
She would have died.
She would have died. And then her kids that she had already would have been without a mother.
Yep. And tragically, this has happened in some cases around the country,
yes,
especially in states like Texas, where there are very few, if any, exceptions for the life of the mother. And I always go back to the fact that there is still nothing codified about how close to dead a woman has to be,
yes,
before she can get treatment. And that is one of the most disturbing things to me. Mm. It's just like, yeah, well, you think she's going to, you know, here is the point where we will give this woman the care that she needs.
It's alarming.
I mean,
it's shameful. And that's one of the reasons I ran. I worked at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. That was my last job before I ran for assembly. And I worked on maternal child health issues. And I saw how important having the full complement of tools are to an OB or OBGYN, and that they're scared to practice, yep, in this state because, yep, they never know if that toolbox is going to be ripped away from them. So they'll go to another state because there's other states that have the full tool set available. They can do their job. They can take care of patients and they can feel good about the work they're doing and without being worried about getting sued or a threat of a lawsuit or their license being taken away. It's shameful.
If you're just joining us, Representative Renuka Mayadev is our guest. She represents Madison's 77th Assembly District. And I do think it's important to point out as well that at the recent Republican convention in Wisconsin, they did as a body vote in favor of that 1849 abortion ban here in Wisconsin. They're not letting that go. No. They're still very much supportive of that. I just think it's important that people realize that.
And I think something that you just said was important as far as your interaction with that woman, the devout Catholic, is that one, this is a far more nuanced discussion than certain politicians will allow it to take place. And two,
absolutely,
a majority, I don't want to say numbers, but I think we see in the polls that more Americans, more Wisconsinites are in favor of access to this health care than people who are just saying, no, 1849 is a wonderful year to go back to. So it almost seems, and correct me if I'm wrong, they're not even listening to the people they represent.
Yeah, they're not. This is something the majority of Wisconsinites want to have the availability and access to. And they're just running their agenda and not listening to the constituents, not listening to the people. And this is men and women. This is every race, every religion, every socioeconomic status in our state. This is not one singular profile that you can point to that's against this. So,
well, and I always find it interesting that the Republicans like to present themselves as pro-family and pro-child, and we want you to have babies, but yet it almost seems like once the child is born, then you're on your own. Then we're not going to give you any help, especially, again, this brings us back to child care. So there were special funding under the Biden administration that helped child care kept child care going in Wisconsin during the pandemic. That money is about to run out.
Yeah, that's right. So there were federal funds that were available that kept our providers' doors open, the lights on, so that folks could make sure that those slots were there, especially for those families that were working in jobs where they couldn't stay home during the pandemic. They had to go to work. They were our essential workers. And so now that funding's running out, and it's very important that we make sure that providers can keep their lights on, their doors open, and so that we as Democrats introduced this bill, the Child Care Counts bill, last week. And we need to get it done. They took it out of the budget, and we need to make sure that this singular bill passes.
What is within this bill, Representative? Where will this money come? How are we going to fund our child care centers?
Yeah, so $440 million of it is GPR, so state funding. And then the another $40 million is federal funds. So TANF funds that come to us that we should be using and can use to support providers.
Because if I understand correctly, the money for this runs out at the end of June.
That's right, June 30.
When this money runs out, and if we cannot get anything passed in Wisconsin, we are looking at a massive amount of closures of child care centers in Wisconsin, right?
That's exactly right, Jane. So 25% have already said they have to close their doors.
25%?
Yeah. Yep. 1/4. And in some areas, that might be higher, right? So that's, you know, an average. So, and about 60% have been really clear that they're going to have to raise their tuition costs. And families are already stretched thin.
Yep.
This is not something that is easy for families. Majority of them, I would almost say all of them. I mean, the costs for childcare are enormous. And so that's going to be untenable.
And I think it's important also because you're right. Child care is very, very expensive, but it's not because child care providers are all driving Mercedes. That's not the case. They're very low. The pay to work in child care is very low. It's the insurance costs.
Yeah. I mean, you've seen the wages. I mean, the wages, the median wage for staff in child care settings is between $7 and $13 an hour. That's the median wage. I mean, there is no other work that's so important, that's such high value work paid at such low wages.
I think it was Corrine Hendrickson who was either on our show or Pat's show who's saying one of the things they're working towards is just being able to get enough funding so they can start the base pay at $13, which it's great. That's great. But it's also like they should be making more.
Well, again, we attach so much importance to children and taking care of our children and all of these things. But when it comes to pay for it, it's like, yes, well, maybe they're not that important.
Ask grandma and grandpa. They can come out of retirement.
Or just quit your job and stay home.
Yeah. Ladies.
It's ludicrous. I mean, are they not? Maybe they must not be living in the same world we're living in, where most households have two people working, or if you're a single household, one person's working, one, two, three jobs, right, to make the household budget work. And so this is not something that's in reality.
We're going to continue our conversation with Representative Renuka Mayadev. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Matt and Air on Air is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 9 to 11. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
$5,000. That's the average amount of money people in the U.S. are now spending on gas in a year. $5,000. That's crazy. If you drive, you have to download Upside, the free app that gives you cash back every time you get gas. That's right. You can earn real cash back with Upside just by buying the gas you're already buying. You can literally start earning cash back today.
I use Upside every time I fill up, and I've already made around $200-$300.
You're putting gas in your car anyway. Why not get real cash back? If you like free money, download Upside.
I'm saving the cash I earn from using Upside to help pay for a vacation later this year.
Download the free Upside app now to earn cash back every time you buy gas. Use promo code OCEAN to get an extra 25 cents per gallon on your first tank. You can cash out anytime right to your bank, PayPal, or a gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Upside app and use promo code OCEAN for a 25 cents per gallon bonus on your first tank. That's code OCEAN for a 25 cents per gallon bonus.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In discussions over the so-called Big Beautiful Bill, backed by Donald Trump, that's making its way through Congress, none other than Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson has emerged as the most prominent Republican critic of the bill, saying at a recent Milwaukee Press Club event that it is, quote, not even close to adequate. Johnson has said he wants spending cuts to go even further, including making cuts to Medicaid. But Johnson's position as a critic of this bill makes him especially influential in these negotiations. But let's not forget the last time he was in a similar position. In 2017, he was a critic of the Trump tax cut bill, but what he fought for was a tax break for certain types of businesses, perhaps not coincidentally, businesses owned by his largest donors, Dick and Liz Uline. In 2018 alone, the Ulines received more than $200 million in tax breaks because of this bill. So as the Big Beautiful Bill is negotiated in the Senate, let's not forget this piece of recent history.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
The Elder Care Locator is here to help you live your best life as you age at home. Our call center advisors are ready to connect you with trustworthy, local experts. Help is just a phone call away at 1-800-677-1116.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we go to the John and Gordy Show down in Madison. It was a bittersweet week for John and Gordy as they bid farewell to their longtime producer, Sam, who is leaving the show to pursue a career in teaching. Here now is Sam's last moments on the show.
WMDX 92.7. It's John and Gordy in the morning. And every once in a while, we mention our producer, Sam. You know, he throws his two cents in from time to time. You know, he's just kind of hanging out. He's not really participating in the program Rock. Much, usually.
Just turn on the overhead?
Kidding,
lights?
Of
they
course.
Don't, they don't pay me enough for that.
No, they're very, very last day Sam is producing the show here, and we don't know what's going to happen, you know. I think
you know what?
It's going to be...
It's going to be a sad day.
It's going to be an empty empty spot because you have added so much to this program. And it was just a coincidence. We're all thrown together. Yeah. And you look at us like, I'm going to take care of these two senior citizens. Are you kidding me?
Well, I remember the first time I met you, I really didn't know what to make of you. Like, I asked, you said that you wanted the show to be political, and I had no idea what that meant. I don't know, whatever
could've
you said.
Could have meant a lot of things.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Whatever you said was filled with euphemisms, and I really could not tell what you were trying to tell me.
Yeah, yeah.
Boy,
yeah, Sam, it's been a great ride.
Yeah, it really has.
You got a few texts, you know.
Yeah, we did. We got a couple here.
Did you already tell them about Mark?
No.
Prairie to Sack, yeah. Saying, from this radio show, Sam is leaving. We will miss your skills on the radio dial and for taking your talents to the high school room and enlightening our youth for a while.
Yeah.
Which is what he's doing next.
Yeah, and another one that says, good luck, Sam. Really going to miss you. How well you fit into the morning crew, the voice of reason that kept the elders in line. I love being called an elder.
You are.
Yeah. You're both old enough to be my grandparents.
Yeah, yeah, thanks again. goodbye. If you know what I mean, it's wishing you all the best moving forward as a teacher.
Johnny Middleton.
And it was always like having one of my kids in here because my sons are, you know, 26 and 23. So, you know.
Right in there. Sam, you're 23, right?
I'm 24.
24 yes. already. Okay. Yeah.
Now, I was at home last night thinking, what music could I select to say goodbye to Sam? And you know, what comes to mind? I thought about your career, your side career as a movie projectionist.
Yes.
You're really into the movies here. So I put together this little montage. So this is a goodbye to Sam. Go ahead.
Hello, Sam. Play it once, Sam. For all time's sake, play it, Sam.
He hasn't played it in a long time.
You must remember this. A kiss is just a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh.
Actually, let's hear something else here. Hang on.
The fundamental things apply.
How about this?
As time goes by.
Here we go.
Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more.
Yeah.
A woman done left, took all the reason I was working for.
There you go.
Trying to stand in my way as I'm walking
out the door. This is a classic. Radio guys used to play this all the time on their last day on the air.
When they knew it was their last day?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was very rare that we knew, but yes.
Oh, that's
now,
great.
Now, we only have a couple of minutes left, but we got a couple of things, so we better get through this. We got about three minutes.
What?
Got your backpack.
You said you had all you needed, but I think this backpack really says it.
I'm going back to school. That's
Corey
right.
Corey found this, but you've been our hero all this last year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So we put a few things in here. I know you don't need a whole lot.
There's just, some goodbye.
We're going back
presents.
To school. You're going to need some big old pencils.
Oh, wow.
You know, the big thick kind.
Ticonderoga
really
number twos. Yeah.
A little something to do while the kids are, you know, studying and doing what they need
like
to
a
do.
Little tabletop.
Pinball game.
We have teacher, you know, vinyl stickers that you can put on your books.
Oh, this
books.
Is great. Oh,
yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
We've got some special erasers. We figured the donuts would probably do for you. The donut
nice.
Erasers.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice.
What? 30 seconds?
No, no. We have 3 minutes.
Okay, I'm not going too fast. All right. Okay, so I'm slowing down. This is a pencil sharpener, of course, in the shape of fries. We
nice.
Like fries.
They're
yes,
cool.
Yeah, that's very nice.
And, of course, a very special pen that's only for you.
It's got a spaceship on it.
And it does that.
Whoa! The spaceship just blew up.
That's
goodness.
Yeah. I drank too much coffee today. I'm shaking.
Okay.
A red pen for correcting, of course.
Oh, I'm going to put that to good use.
Put that to good use. Now we go in the big pocket.
Yeah, there's some other things.
I just want to mention here, it's a Spider-Man backpack.
Yes.
All right,
I'm
just good.
Very
gorgeous.
Cool. Yeah.
It has hero on it, because it is, right? Of course.
The Marvel
now, you're teaching history, right?
That's right.
History.
Yeah.
So you need to know the history of Taylor Swift.
Oh, that's good.
No.
So you're
trying
to be up on
trying
it.
To turn me just to make
like so the kids think
a little golden book about Taylor Swift?
Yes,
really? You like that?
Yes.
Golden book.
Oh,
my God.
Show it to the camera.
That's great.
It is. And, of course, the history of Barbie, which is very important.
Oh, wonderful.
Smallest, pinkest viewfinder we could find.
Yeah. You need to relate to the kids.
Right to the kids, yep. And, of course, when all goes to hell in a handbasket, Tylenol. We need Tylenol.
Yeah. Come on in, Megan.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And I got a card for me here.
Yep.
Not one.
Yeah.
But two balls.
Yeah.
John and Gordy
stress
balls.
Those are going to be getting a good squeeze.
They'll be getting a good squeeze.
Yeah.
You got your balls back.
Yeah.
Should I open this card here?
Well, we'll do that. We'll do that. Yeah, do that now. Go ahead, do that. That's a card. That's from everybody at the station. You know,
we
all had to. Oh, yeah, that's the big part.
We're at 1 minute.
All right.
1 minute.
Yeah.
Well, about a minute.
Well,
and
this
change.
Is a gift card for dicks.
There you go.
So you got the balls and you got the dicks.
All right.
And.
What?
I didn't see
there's something more in there.
One last item. Because they're wearing it.
Brand new.
It's the brand new
John and Gordy t-shirt. Yeah.
Now available in your Civic Media store.
Nice.
Oh, that's gorgeous, yeah.
We got a minute here, Sam.
I do like the t-shirts.
Thank you, guys. Yeah. This is wonderful. Oh,
well,
man.
You deserve all that and more, and we appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's
good
been
luck
a wonderful
to you.
Time.
Come back and visit us. Okay?
Seriously.
Of course.
Now you're going to make me cry.
Come back and...
If you do your cough one more time. Okay. All right. Good.
I've never
enough
seen
of that.
That live.
What? Absolutely classic. Yes.
Yeah. Never doing that again.
All right.
And we give you permission to co-host on Todd Elbaugh's show every once in a while.
Thank you. Thank you for your permission.
You can also do that here if you'd
Robert
like.
Robert Barron.
I don't know.
Good luck to you always, Sam.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You meant a whole heck of a lot to this show. You really.
Yeah. Sam Davison, everybody. Yeah. We'll talk to you on Monday. Have a great day. So long. Stephanie Miller's next. Let the
sunshine. It's the John Gordy Show.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. President Trump on social media directing Homeland Security, Defense Department, and others to take all necessary actions to, in his words, liberate Los Angeles from the migrant invasion. Protesters of immigration raids and the newly deployed National Guard are near a federal building, says ABC's Alex Stone in L.A., a tense moment when they had to make way for a motorcade.
The crowd fought back. Pepper balls were fired off of the crowd. Flashbang devices were used. The crowd has grown, some holding profanity-laced anti-ICE signs.
Democratic governors say the Guard deployment is an abuse of power. Millions in the U.S. are under potentially dangerous weather alerts now and later tonight with possible tornadoes and hail the size of baseballs. Included are Virginia, West Virginia, Maryland, plus the Washington, D.C. area. A skydiving plane crashed today in Tullahoma, Tennessee, says the police department. Two people hurt, 20 on board, a twin-engine turboprop. This is ABC News.
The Brewers lose to the Padres. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports from AmFam Field, where the Brewers lose to the Padres today, 1-0. A good outing from Freddie Peralta, pitching six scoreless innings. The Brewer bats just unable to bring in runs, so San Diego leaves winning this series 2-1. Up next, the Brewers host the Braves beginning tomorrow night for a 3-game series at AmFam Field. We got a chance to talk to pitcher Brandon Woodruff, whose latest setback was getting hit on a comeback at 108 miles an hour in the elbow of his pitching arm.
That's life, you know. I could have been walking down the street and broke my ankle, you know, off the sidewalk or something, you know. It's about putting everything in perspective. I was lucky that I got away with what I got away with. I mean, it could have hit me in the head. It could, you know what I mean? If you look at it a lot of different ways, it's just take it for what it is. It sucked in the moment because I've gotten to essentially the finish line the last two times, and something has popped up.
That's Brewers veteran pitcher Brandon Woodruff with Sports on Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Not sure if Steve Carell has big feet, but his shoes will be tough to fill. No one knows that more than Domhnall Gleeson, who will play the boss on a new spinoff of NBC's The Office. The paper will feature the same documentary film crew from The Office, even though it was never really featured, as they record the daily happenings of a dying local newspaper, and it will be brought to you by the same team that brought you the American version of The Office. Gleeson, the son of actor Brendan Gleeson, knows the challenges he faces. The actor said he recently received encouraging words from Carell's Office co-star, John Krasinski, who reassured the actor that he was in great hands with executive producer Greg Daniels. Daniels successfully rebooted Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant's show of the same title from the UK. Although the title is different, the challenges faced in the paper are the same faced by those who ran a fictitious paper company. There is no release date yet, but the paper will premiere in September on Peacock. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight and tomorrow, breezy at times with a few showers and even a couple of rumbles of thunder. Low tonight, mid-50s. High tomorrow in the upper 60s. On Tuesday, sunshine returns. Temps heat up to around 80 degrees. Right now, it's 76.
Matt and Air on Air.
Congressman Mark Pocan is here. Are you planning on going out on the road again, having a couple more town halls?
Yes. No, Claire, Derek and I have been invited by Opportunity Wisconsin, so I'm really looking forward to debating Derek. My guess is it's more likely I will sprout a head full of hair than he will show up. This is important to let people know what's in this bill, because there is a very good reason why Republicans are hiding from town halls.
Catch Matt and Air on Air at its new time, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
We are not perfect here at Civic Media. Far be it. Certainly not perfect at this show. But one thing I can assure you of, our owner that I can see right through this glass right now, Sage Weil, has never once told me what to say and encourages us to speak the truth. And that's why, above all else, I'm proud to work for this company. And along with my colleagues, we will bring you what's really happening out there. And if we get it wrong along the way, we'll admit to that and correct ourselves as well.
Catch The Todd Allbaugh Show at its new time, weekdays 2 to 4 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Maggie Dawn.
At 5 p.m., I'll be joined with UW Wisconsin Law School professor Aaron Barbato to talk about immigration processes. We dispel myths and give you the real scoop.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
We return you now to the Civic Media Spotlight. This last half hour of the Spotlight, we'll hear two segments from the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie's guest this week was Michael Negron, former economic advisor to the president. He's on to discuss how the turbulent situation with Trump's tariffs are affecting small businesses in Wisconsin. This is a two-part interview. Stay tuned for the last segment of the Spotlight for more of Maggie's conversation.
That is what our framers intended, and I don't care if it's your team winning today, it won't always be that way. So what in the heck are they doing?
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
Are you kidding me?
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I think that speaks to Wisconsinites in a really special way that I've been to 15 baseball stadiums. It ain't the same in other places.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome back, everybody. Happy hump day. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I won't stop talking about it. I just won't. Until we all know actually what is going on in this country. My next guest will help us understand that better from the vantage point of small businesses. His name is Michael Negron. He's the former special assistant to the president for economic policy. While at the White House, he sat on Joe Biden's National Economic Council, and he recently joined the board of directors of the Small Business Majority, a national small business organization that empowers America's diverse entrepreneurs to build a thriving and equitable economy. Michael, thank you so much for making time. As an economist and as a data dork, I always love it when other people, and I say those things with a lot of love and respect, join me to talk about these things here on the show, because some, you know, wonks start talking and it's like the Peanuts character, right? So we got to make it understandable for folks.
Yes, yes, we do, especially when you're talking about small businesses, which are the bedrock of our economy.
Absolutely. So I wanted to start with some sound, Jacob. We're going to take the Trump sound right away. You know, having observed all of the Trump flippity-floppities when it comes to economic policy since January 21st, it made my head hurt. I actually had to get, like, write my own timeline to keep straight all of the things that were happening. He promised us 90 deals in 90 days. We're not even close to any of that. We're now currently at the highest effective tax rates that we've... Excuse me. I should say highest effective tariff tax rates, they're all taxes, that we've seen in this country for 80 plus years. Let's take a listen. This was quite the savvy question to the president a few weeks back.
Mr. President, Wall Street analysts have coined a new term called the taco trade. They're saying Trump always chickens out on your tariff threats, and that's why markets are higher this week. What's your response to that?
I kick out.
Chicken out.
Oh, isn't that nice? Chicken out. I've never heard that. You mean because I reduced China from 145% that I set down to 100 and then down to another number? And I said you have to open up your whole country. And because I gave the European Union a 50% tax tariff, and they called up and they said, please, let's meet right now. Please, let's meet right now. And I said, okay, I'll give you till June 9, I actually asked them, I said, what's the date? Because they weren't willing to meet. And after I did what I did, they said, we'll meet anytime you want. And we have an end date of July 9th. You call that chickening out? Because we have $14 trillion now invested, committed to investing when Biden didn't have anything.
We could just talk about the $14 trillion, which is a completely made up number. Half of it refers back to deals that were already done. I don't want to do that. The head lobbyist, the head of the organization, right? The U.S. Chamber of Commerce went into the Oval Office and said, please, Mr. President, please create exemptions in your tariff policy for small businesses so that they will have certainty. They can actually project out. They can run their books. They know what the SKU codes will mean in terms of the price of goods. They know how to deal with currency exchange prices. And Donald Trump said, go kick rocks. Meanwhile, he continues to cut deals for those who can afford to buy and curry favor, whether we're talking about tariff policies or criminal pardons. Michael, take us through, why is the Trump taco and the Trump tariff terror so devastating for small businesses?
Well, that, you said it exactly right there, that you can't predict what's coming with him. And the taco trade and the memes have been pretty funny very recently. But it gets at the fact that it's coming from Wall Street, and it's saying, when the president talks about tariffs and he unleashes a new threat, the market tanks. But don't worry, he's going to cave and then the market will come back up. And that's great if you're a Wall Street trader. But when he's making these statements and when he's imposing these policies and you're a small business owner and you're having to order your inventory for, depends on your business. If you might be a toy store and you want to be ready for back to school and Christmas. You might be selling clothing or summer furniture and you're getting ready for the summer. You're buying this stuff months in advance. And so if he's putting in, on April 2nd, he announces a set of tariffs. They got up to 145% on China. He also announced that day a set of country by country tariffs, which were in the midst of a 90-day pause, but 46%.
Don't forget the penguins, Michael. Yeah, the penguins.
That's right. Mm-hmm. He taxed some uninhabited other than penguin
islands.
Inhabited islands. And he quickly, folded on those, but they're still looming out there. And it was just 2 weeks ago that his Treasury Secretary was on some of the Sunday shows. And he said, soon we're going to be sending letters to these countries to set their tariffs, their individual country tariffs, if we don't like the way the negotiations are going. And so if you're a business owner and you're trying to predict what your supply chains will look like over the next few months, what are you doing with that information? I mean, even the stand down from the 145%, which he talked about in the segment that you played, even standing down to 30%.
Yeah,
30%. That is tremendously high, tremendously costly. And so not only is he constantly changing, but the dollar amounts of these changes are significant. A few weeks ago, a couple of outlets did this, but the Washington Post is the one that's top of mind. They went through and they counted. And of course, this is before his threats to the EU and before the threat to Apple in particular, but counted the number of times that he had changed tariff policy since taking office. And it was at over 50. And we have to be approaching 60 now. And so if you are someone who's trying to decide whether to make an investment or to hire or to add a location, how are you making decisions right now? And the fact is, we're hearing it from business owners across the country that you're not. A couple of weeks ago, the National Federation of Independent Businesses, they do a monthly small business optimism survey. And unsurprisingly, the last 4 months, business optimism and confidence has declined. But what to me was so striking in the most recent survey for April was that the share of small businesses planning to make capital investments in the next 6 months fell to the lowest level since April of 2020. What was happening in April of 2020? The beginning
COVID.
Of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And so this is not a great environment to be a small business owner. And exactly as you noted, you had the head of the chamber asking for help for small business, got a flat no. But when you have the CEO of Apple coming in, they got some changes, although, now the president threatened to undo those, or at least to do some sort of Apple specific tariff. The big three automakers got at least some relief on the foreign auto parts. And so if you're a big player, you can get some help. But if you're a little guy, there's no help coming. In fact, likely more instability.
And that instability, what if you don't run a small business or you don't know a small business owner, again, it may seem like, oh, well, as long as he brings the levels down, blah, blah, blah. No, the details matter, and it paralyzes. If you're a small business owner, like, oh, my gosh, well, what do I do? Well, I'm going to, it's like flight. What is it? Freeze, fight, and flight. They're freezing, right? Because the threat is so real. It changes. There's no predictability. It's largely, and you can hear it in the taco clip we played. The thing that's driving all of it is whether or not countries will kiss his butt, which he said at a donor dinner. It wasn't the donor dinner. It was the Kennedy Center for the Arts, their board dinner, said it right out loud. Oh, they're kissing my butt. Isn't this great? Small business are business owners are paralyzed with doubt. And I want to get to the question of, is Trump trying to throw them a bone with some of the things in the big brutal bill, which I've heard spun by some in the MAGA regime as being pro-small business? I want to get to that. But I just wanted to lean in, Michael, a little bit on the concept of margins, right? These are these fancy words that people throw around in business. But a margin in a small business is how much cash on hand you have, how much, what I'm just going to say, like float do you have for big fluctuations or errors in your planning? Will you be able to get over the next ocean wave crest of problems, right? Back in April of 2020, there was a global pandemic not caused by an American president. Now we have a global economic panic, paralyzation of small business owners that is having ripple effects throughout our economy created by an American president. So if you can just explain to people what's happening, not only can people not plan, it's paralyzing them. And if they can't plan, if they can't look forward in their budgets, they can't hire, they don't know if they can make a capital investment, and price points are moving all over the place. I've been prognosticating, you're going to see thousands of small businesses going under because margins are just smaller. There's less room for error. Am I right about that?
I think it is a very tough time for small business right now. As you've said, as you noted, the margins can be quite tight depending on the industry. A small retailer or a restaurant, you're looking at maybe a couple percentage points. And so if the price of some of your inputs, whether it's people may not remember this, but a few months ago they imposed a tariff on Mexican tomatoes. It was specific, right? It was a specific tariff on Mexican tomatoes. And if you look at other types of goods from overseas, other foods and items, that can really eat into your margins if you don't raise prices. And so what will likely happen, and I think the canary in the coal mine here is Walmart.
Yeah.
A few weeks ago, Walmart, biggest retailer in the country, I believe also the world, announced that they were going to have to raise prices starting in late May. And this is after broad reporting on the fact that in April, Walmart was starting, and Target, so some of the larger retailers, but Walmart in particular, were pushing their vendors to eat the cost of tariffs because they didn't want to have those passed on to them, and they wanted to keep their prices low, including Walmart reaching out to its China-based vendors, trying to get them to eat the costs. Well, flash forward to the present, it sounds like they didn't get enough relief, and so they're going to raise their prices. And here's the thing. Walmart can do that because they're the biggest retailer. But if you're a small business owner, you don't have the ability to negotiate with your suppliers, with your vendors. And so if Walmart is pushing for a deal and they're not getting one, or they're not getting enough of one to shield their customers from prices, what's going to happen to the rest of businesses, right? And so I think what we're going to end up seeing is businesses are going to have to raise prices to avoid going out of business. And even then, it won't be enough for some. And so we're likely in for some tough times, both from a cost of living perspective, where we're going to see prices go up on a whole host of goods, particularly those from China. But we're going to see businesses really getting squeezed.
68 million Americans work in small businesses. 68 million. If Walmart can't use the biggest buying power leverage in the world to get their suppliers to eat the increase in prices because of Donald Trump's tariff terror, the mom and pop down the street ain't going to be able to do it either. Our conversation with Michael Negron continues on the other side. Former special assistant to President Biden for economic policy, currently on the board of directors for the Small Business Majority. My name is Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked, where we make wonk fun here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Medicare loses about $60 billion annually to fraud, errors, and abuse. June 2nd through the 8th is Medicare Fraud Prevention Week, focusing on the actions everyone can take to prevent, detect, and report Medicare fraud. Learn more by liking and following Wisconsin Senior Medicare Patrol on Facebook. Then visit our website, smpwi.org. For information and advice, remember, Wisconsin Senior Medicare Patrol.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds signed two election bills May 2nd, one of which includes provisions for poll workers to challenge the citizenship of voters in the polling place, a ban on ranked choice voting, and a higher bar for third parties. Among several new provisions, House File 954 authorizes state election officials to access federal agency databases and gives local election officials authority to challenge citizenship of a registered voter at the polls. A recent presidential executive order now allows access to those databases. If a voter is not able to provide documentation at the polls, they would be forced to use a provisional ballot. Only days before the 2024 election, the Secretary of State's office challenged the eligibility of over 2,100 registered voters. Most were naturalized citizens or data errors, while 277 were registered non-citizens. Of those, only 35 voted out of 1.7 million ballots cast. Pro-voter groups argue such mass challenges intimidate legitimate naturalized citizens from voting. Two provisions in 954 attempt to protect major party power. It bans ranked choice voting for any election in Iowa and raises the bar for third parties to field candidates. Third parties now need to garner 2% of the vote in three consecutive elections to qualify for the ballot. We have more on HF 954 at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Today's job market is full of demand for skilled trade workers. Electricians, welders, mechanics, these and other trades are the backbone of every community. They're also a huge part in making sure the Army National Guard is always fulfilling its mission of service to our country and communities. Soldiers train to keep the power flowing, engines running, and supplies moving. The skilled trades these soldiers perform are the same ones needed in today's civilian workforce. Army National Guard soldiers are on the fast track to learning skills that can set them up for success at home with companies looking to hire the best. With options from plumber to helicopter mechanic and everything in between, soldiers are able to select the trades that best fit their lives. Their resumes are being built through their paid training and part-time service. Find out how you too can learn a trade profession and serve your community and country by visiting NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network, joined this half hour by Michael Negron, Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress. Oh, no, that's not your correct title anymore. I'm reading off the screen. You are...
No, I'm there.
Oh, you are.
I'm still there.
You're,
yes,
you're at the Center for American Progress. Okay, good. Well, I'm glad I didn't misspeak, and thank you for correcting me. In addition to being at the Center for American Progress, he's also on the board of directors for the Small Business Majority. He's served on the White House's National Economic Council. He knows tons about small businesses, including these facts that Michael has shared with me. Not just 68 million Americans. Let's talk about Wisconsinites. In Wisconsin, we have just under 500,000 small businesses that employ close to 1.3 million people in the state. These are 97% of all businesses in Wisconsin, and they employ about half of our workforce. So it is a big, big deal. Now, Michael, there's a big, brutal bill that the House has adopted promising one of the single largest transfers of wealth yet again from working people to the top 1%. And they're doing some things with the ACA. It caught my eye, and I know yours, because so many small business owners rely on the ACA to access healthcare coverage. Tell us more.
That's right. Well, the Affordable Care Act, and particularly the exchanges, that's where you can go and shop for coverage. And with the American Rescue Plan, the federal government established a tax credit that made it more affordable to get plans on those exchanges. And we have about 4.2 million small business owners and self-employed individuals who get their healthcare from the exchanges. And so the failure to renew and extend those tax credits, which is which the big, beautiful bill would not do, means that these business owners are going to end up paying more for their health insurance, or they may not be able to pay for them at all. And so that is a significant impact just on the owners themselves, let alone their employees, because many of their employees are also, particularly if you're a small business who can't afford to have a group plan, your employees are relying on the Affordable Care Act most likely for their insurance. And so you're looking at an impact not only to the business owners, but to the employees as well. And that's not even to mention in the same kind of realm, cuts to SNAP and to Medicaid, which will affect the consumers for these businesses. And so if consumers have less spending money or are more uncertain about their own livelihood, they're less likely to spend money at your store. And so that you're looking at an impact there just to people's bottom lines and to their livelihoods.
I want to give a little emphasis there because, Michael, one of my great sort of macro fears is that we are fast approaching a point where the economic engine of U.S. GDP, which has largely for the last 40, 50 years been on an upward trajectory. Again, the majority of the wealth that that growth has created has not inured to the benefit of the middle class. But the very engine is not just the small business, but it is consumer demand, right? That 70% plus of the U.S. economy is driven by consumer purchasing. What I keep telling people is billionaires stop purchasing stuff because of this weird thing called the law of diminishing marginal returns. Your 100th Rolls Royce ain't as punchy as the first one. They keep their wealth. It is the middle class person that spends the vast majority of the dollars spent in this country on consumer goods. That pinch is very real. People will feel real economic pain. They will buy less. They will buy less from small businesses. Small businesses will have less health insurance because they will not be able to afford it because of the expiration of this tax credit. Tell me something good, Michael. What can people do to staunch the bleed, as it were?
Well, I think talking about the impacts and having business owners out there talking about how, whether it's the tariffs, whether it's potential cuts to healthcare, how it's going to hurt their bottom line, how it's going to hurt their consumers or their employees. I do think that will have a real impact. The fact that the Trump taco, that the taco play exists, is in fact because every time he does something, he gets really bad feedback from business owners, from the industry, from various business industries, and he retreats in the face of it. Now, the one bad outcome of that is that he's so wishy-washy, right? And you have all that uncertainty. But the fact is that they have shown to be responsive when they see they're going to hurt business owners, particularly those who are part of their what they perceive to be their voting base, right? In red states or Trump administration in particular thinks that they're doing solid for small business with their policies. And so just lifting up those voices in every state, having stories shared that show that impact. You know, I did a hearing a couple weeks ago in the House, and there were a few small businesses who were participating in the hearing, and just hearing them talk about the impact of tariffs on their bottom line and how it meant they were going to have to reduce the number of product lines, how they were having trouble remaining profitable. That it's really powerful, compelling testimony. And we know that's all over the country. And so we just need more and more of that to be out there and elevated, because that seems to have some impact both on the administration and on the Congress to push back marginally on these policies. And it's got to be a game of inches, right? You push a little bit, they retreat a little bit, push a little bit more, they retreat a little bit more. And hopefully we can get them to ultimately back off some of these really short-sighted policies that are going to hurt so many small business owners.
Got to keep the pressure up. Very briefly, we got about 30 seconds, Michael. Republicans have what I would call an expansive definition of small businesses when they talk about helping out small businesses. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that when we think about small businesses, we're really thinking about mom and pop shops. And so you could have a definition where you have a $5 million, $10 million business as a small business. But really, we have to be worried about the millions of mom and pops that have a handful of employees or no employees at all who are on a knife's edge and who go under any minute with these policies.
Michael, my pleasure. Look forward to having you back sometime soon, because this is where it's at. Michael Negron, Senior Fellow with the Center for American Progress Action Fund, and on the board of directors of the Small Business Majority. When we come back, folks, it'll be time for Midweek Sound Off. What's on your mind? 855-75-CIVIC.
The Maggie Dawn Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Soaring high above La Crosse, this is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Wayne Cabot. National Guard troops fired pepper balls at protesters outside the federal complex in L.A., where deportation cases are handled. 22 Democratic governors called President Trump's deployment of the National Guard an alarming abuse of power. The president was asked about this as he left New Jersey for Camp David.
Well, we're going to have troops everywhere. We're not going to let this happen to our country. We're not going to let our country be torn apart like it was under Biden and his auto pen.
The U.S. Coast Guard is searching now for a downed Cessna with six people on board, about 3 miles west of Point Loma off San Diego. The man the Trump administration mistakenly sent to a Salvadoran prison, Kilmar Abrego Garcia, is back in the U.S. His attorney saying the case is not over until the government is held accountable. A Chicago police officer pursuing a suspect unintentionally shot and killed his partner. Crystal Rivera was 36, leaves behind a 10-year-old daughter. This is ABC News.